So we'll begin. I want to begin with a Facebook status that my mother sent out. Okay. Which is just interesting.
You know, after the show, we're going to befriend it.
We're going to befriend my mother. She'll love it. So she writes the following. She just puts this up. May Hashem watch over my children and all of the south of Israel. He is our only hope. That's what she wrote. Which is she got seven likes, which is pretty good. You know what I'm saying? It's a very simple, very straightforward status. Something that all of us agree with. But the question really we have to ask ourselves is how many of us thought about it in those terms during the past few days? Meaning, if you guys are nodding, that's very good. How many of us saw the events of the, you know, the rockets falling down and whatever in terms of Hashem protecting us? You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'll just say for myself, I would admit that I, you know, until my mother posted it, I'd really had a hard time putting it into religious framework. You know what I'm saying? Like, because there's so much technical. There's so much, you know, that you hear on the news about the Iron Dome and the rocket batteries, and like we were talking about the Mamad.
You know what I'm saying? When I first heard, you know, the first people who were injured and they were from Thailand, I said, obviously Hashem is protecting us because no Israelis have been hurt.
It's an interesting question. What? Lori doesn't like that. Okay, I don't know if I agree with that also, but if you think about like. Just play the odds, you know, how many rockets were shot at us? Like 100, 200, whatever it was. And, you know,
23 dozen, according to the BBC.
Only 3 dozen? No.
Because they posted it, 5 Palestinians were killed in this one article.
Yeah, I don't want, I really, it's so easy. It's so easy to get into the, you know, media, blah, blah. I don't want to get into that. But if you think about it, like, there's clearly, like, even if you want to say, you know, there are terrible shots and they're really bad, you know, like, we have to be able to allow, I have to force ourselves to see Yad Hashem, you know, in the you know, like in these. Like, I'm just so blown over by the technology of this Iron Dome system, by the defense capabilities, and like, and the percentages they're getting. But you also have to be able to see Yad Hashem in the capabilities that He gives us to protect ourselves. You know what I'm saying? And so I thought to myself, here's an amazing thing that here we are, we have this sense of protection. And in some ways, it's so pervasive that we don't even see it.
There's another article about a member of Knesset whose wife said the only Iron Dome we need is the kippah.
Is the kippah? Right. I think it was, you know what I'm saying? I don't agree with that.
We need God.
I think, correct. I think that we need to see the Iron Dome as the kippah of Hashem.
Yeah.
Okay? And the reason I wanted to I bring this up, not just because it's current events, is because I think it's very relevant to the... To the subject nature of the parshiot that we have, as you all know, this week we have Bayakel and Pekudei, which are just brutally long, right? And it's all a repetition of everything we learned in Truma and Tzavet. So everything we read in the plans in Truma was the plans to build the Mishkan and the Kelim, and in Tzavet it was the plans to construct to make the Begidei Kohen Gadol. So in Vayakil you have the actual construction, and in Pekudei you have the actual the making of the Begidei Kohuna, plus a few other important details as well. The most important of which is the final product. What happened when Moshe finally put everything together and built the Mishkan? Because what I want to discuss is what's the difference between there being a Mishkan, or for our purposes, the presence of the Beit HaMikdash, or a lack thereof. An explicit presence of God versus an implicit or something that's not there. Because we live clearly in a time, obviously, where there's no Beit HaMikdash. There's no explicit presence of Hashem. And our job is then to find Hashem in the hidden. In the things that you can't see. So what is it? What's the difference between the two? So we're going to start at the very, very end of Parashat Pekudei. Very end, chapter 40, Perek Mem, Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Okay, because we start with what happens when there is a Mishkan, and then we're going to go back and we're going to see what happens when there was not, when there wouldn't have been or might not have been. It's unclear what exactly was supposed to happen. And we'll do that in PTC. Mem, Perek Mem in Pekudei. Mem, Pasuk Lamed Dalet. The very, very, almost very, very end. Okay. Miss Ainid, great. I'll send you one more book. Okay, who's with you? Let's go. Says the Torah. Lama Dada. So Moshe finally put together the entire Mishkan. Okay? And they cut. It's ready. It's done. It's completed. Says the Torah. Vayichas he'anan et ohel moed. Uchvod Hashem maleh et ha-mishkan. Right? The cloud, when Moshe finally constructed the ohel moed, the cloud, vayichas lechasot, covered the ohel moed. Ukvod Hashem maleh et ha-mishkan. And the glory of God filled the Mishkan. This is in itself a problem. The glory of God filled the Mishkan. Why is it? What's the problem?
Where is there no
Hashem? Right. What? Hashem's everywhere, right? There's a classic. There you go. That's 100%. That is a classic conundrum of the Mishkan. Anytime. There's no Chumash in that one. See the blue one on the shelf below? Shmot 2. Yeah, look for Shmot. Over. To the right. Yeah, Shmot 2. Got it. Okay. It's a classic conundrum. How can God fill the Mishkan if God is everywhere? Is God more in the Mishkan than other places or not? Excellent question. I'll leave you to ponder. Okay. Actually, I would raise it at the Shabbos table. It's a great question because there's no clear answer to that question. It's something that Chazal commentators struggle with forever. It's a huge machloket. And one thing you can suggest a number of answers, right? The most logical answer or the most classic answer for us realists is to say a person who's a realist, not a mystic, would say.
Well, don't they say that's like the area of the Beis Hamikdash, that his presence is just is stronger there?
Well, exactly. What does that mean? His presence is stronger there. Can God be more present in one place than another?
I think it's just more revealed. It's more obvious.
He could do whatever he wants. Okay, so one, you're a mystic. Very good. So one answer, the non-mystic answer, is the rationalist answer would be to say, of course not. God is everywhere. God is not more one place than another. But rather, it's a manifestation of God in order for us to be able to relate. Right? The glory of God filled the Mishkan. The glory of God didn't really fill the Mishkan. The kvod, the honor of God, the presence of God that revealed to us appeared in the Mishkan in order to give us a sense of focus. Right? But Lori would say,
it's
he could do whatever he wants. Right? You know what I'm saying? Right? Yes, to us God is infinite. Yes, God, to us God is everywhere. But who are we to tell God that he can't be more one place than another?
But it doesn't.
I find that much more appealing.
It doesn't say Hashem filled the Mishkan. It said Hashem's glory.
The glory of God. Okay.
It's a bit silly to be realistic about it, like a deep Kabbalistic concept. I mean, it's not silly, but it's like...
So you're calling rationalists silly. Okay. They would probably call you the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you would say, like, it's a bit... You're just going on faith on something you can't prove and have no way of knowing.
Exactly.
That's okay. Right. No, nobody can prove
it's
it.
It's much more... It's much easier for us to deal with, which understand the concept of that Hashem's... There is a place where Hashem's found.
That's easier? I think it's much easier for me to say God is in this book, God is in Hashem is here. Hashem, we teach it like from much easier to say. If we say that everything that exists, if we say that everything exists because of God, everything.
The reality of life at the moment with Hashem having his different name is that there are very few people that live their life realizing that they make every step that they take is that Hashem is with them.
Mm-hmm. Wait a second, the fact they don't realize it doesn't make it more or less true. Right? The hiddenness of God doesn't make God's presence any more or less real. Right. We believe that God is in everything. That God exists. My cell phone exists because God is here. God is in everything.
Much less in your iPhone.
What?
Much less in your iPhone.
Much less. Right. You know what I'm saying? Everything. We can only exist because God is here. So how could God be more in the Beit HaMikdash, more in the Mishkan than any other place? Right? It's harder. The more difficult assertion is the mystical assertion that there is more God in some place than another. I think. Still doesn't bother me. Okay. V'lo yachol Moshe lavo el ohel moed, ki shachan alav he'anan, u'kvod Hashem malei et ha-mishkan. Moshe could not enter the ohel moed because the cloud dwelled upon it, u'kvod Hashem malei et ha-mishkan. Sound familiar?
Saying it again.
We're saying it again. It's interesting. You don't usually find that. The same phrase. Look at the end of the last pasuk. Ukvod Hashem alei tamishkan. The next pasuk, kafei. Ukvod Hashem alei tamishkan. Why did the Torah say the same thing twice? I already knew that. Why didn't you say? Lo yachol Moshe alav ol omorei kishchan alav hanan.
Emphasis.
That's a pretty strong emphasis to say the same thing two times in a row. Everybody understand the question? So obviously there's something new, something unusual, something different about the second time. Ukvod
no,
Hashem.
It was about Moshe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're right.
So in 35, focusing on Moshe was not able to enter.
Mm-hmm.
On Moshe's ability. Before that, it was just a statement of what the situation was.
Okay. So therefore, what are you reading into the second statement, Ukvod Hashem? V'lo yachol Moshe alavo lo mo'ed, ki shechan alav he'anad. Because the cloud came and dwelled there, and, right, God's glory had filled the tent.
So it was so full of Hashem that there was no space for Moshe.
Absolutely. Okay? It was so filled, it was, as opposed to? We'll see.
Up until now, Moshe's been Hashem, and now Moshe's there.
Hashem came down. Okay. We'll see. Ubehalot hanan mi'al ha'mishkan yisu b'deisa b'chol masehem. When the cloud rose up from on the Mishkan, take the green one, okay? B'nei Yisrael would travel according to their travels. V'im lo ye'aleh ha'anan. You see where I am? Chapter 40, the very end. Chapter 40, Lamed Zayin. Okay, the very end. V'im lo ye'aleh ha'anan. And if the cloud would not rise, v'lo yisu ad hayom he'aloto, they wouldn't travel until the cloud rose. Lamin chet, last pasuk in Shemot, ki anan Hashem al mishkan yomam, ve'esh tielai labo, the cloud of God was on the Mishkan during the day, and the fire was there in the night, le'enei kol beit Yisrael b'chol ma'asehem, to the eyes of all of Israel in all of their travels. So God was there, in the middle of the camp, so much so that there was a tangible, visible presence of Hashem.
Everyone
so ends Shemot. What? Le'enei kol Yisrael b'chol ma'aseihem. To the eyes of Israel, I mean, Hashem was always there. Right? That's what we want, isn't it? Isn't that what we want? We want everyone to be able to see. I want to be able to go on go on the Kotel cam right now so that I could see the presence of God in the Beit HaMikdash right now. I want to be able to see, tangible, feel the presence of Hashem. Right? Isn't that the ideal? That's the purpose? Okay, so now what we have to struggle with, the very interesting, is that focus on Moshe. But this is like the culmination of Sefer Shemot. The Ramban, actually, I think we mentioned this one year. The Ramban mentions that this is the ideal of Shemot. The point of Shemot is to bring the Bnei Israel to the point where Hashem is returned to the world. Why did God create the world? He created the world to have human beings living in harmony and worshiping Hashem. So here they are, they're in the desert, they have this beautiful camp, right? And the Shekhinah is dwelling among them, they see God, they're worshiping Hashem. It's almost like this perfect utopian existence. Right? And the goal, obviously, is going to be now, take this perfect utopian existence and do what with it?
Move it.
Da-da-da-da. To? Where? Where? What should we do then, there? Right, build a Beis HaMikdash and establish it as a permanent, perfect utopian society. It's a great plan.
Except. Oh, except we can't see the presence of Hashem.
We can't see the presence of Hashem.
And we don't have
to admit that. I mean, well, those go one in and one, those go hand in hand.
Just two minor,
but they go hand in hand. If we had the Beit HaMikdash, we would have the presence of Hashem. But that's the ideal. This is the point. This is the purpose. So what are we missing if we don't have it? Why don't we have it? There's another point that must be discussed.
We don't have Hashem because we don't have the bank.
No, we don't have Hashem explicitly. We don't have overt Hashem. We have covert Hashem. We're missing quite a bit. Right? So that's the question. What are we missing? Why? Why?
Why do you think is the kesher? This is really a tangent, but it's about covert and overt. That this all this started on Friday afternoon during Purim in Yerushalayim.
Nothing.
You have to learn.
Do I have to?
That's your problem.
Well, I remember when we were in the Gulf War. I remember that Purim was the last. Was the missiles ended on Purim? That was the last time, and I have vivid memories of walking through the dormitory in Shal Avim, like when all the plastic we had pulled down, finally the plastic from the windows on Purim. And we was like, Av and Hafachu, there was this like tremendous release, like a national release. I just have this tremendously vivid memory. They decorated the whole Chadar Ochel. One of them was like a scud with Saddam Hussein on it. It was like, it was only in this country. You know what I'm saying? And like, it's, but nothing. Sorry. I mean, what do you want? I mean, I don't know. That it started now as opposed to Shabbat Friday in Shushan Purim. It was Motse Shushan Purim.
So Sahel started it.
What?
Sahel started. I mean, they chose the timing.
Of course we started it. Why do we?
If I said it started after Purim.
I don't think they intend. They knew that there would be this response. I always say, I wrote on my blog, you know, you got a really big guy. You know, by the level of response that it engenders. You know what I'm saying? And everybody should feel rest assured. I read the Jerusalem Post last night that the Islamic Jihad had a celebratory victory parade in Gaza. So everyone can feel better now. They won. Okay? You know what I'm saying? Okay. We can all feel better. I don't think they planned a response. They do these things all the time. Why? Because you have somebody who is actively engaged. They don't, you know, we don't look to provoke. We're not interested. We're looking to maintain quiet. If it would be quiet, everybody would be happy.
Okay. Except the people in Sderot. They're still getting
there. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know. Okay, so let's go back for a second. There's another point of detail that's really strange or unusual. When we read these last, 1 second, 4 or 5 psukim, something strikes me, and I'll ask you if anything else strikes you, as interesting that you would think this an important detail, but you, like, why is that detail relevant at the very end? Meaning, if the whole culmination, the Mishkan, and the presence of Hashem, etc., etc., what detail here seems at least unusual or striking to me?
Perhaps.
I mean, the cloud carving is great. The Ohol Moed is terrific.
What about the fire?
The fire, I understand, because that's at night.
And Moshe Gonkovin,
Right, the whole thing about Moshe. Thank you. You have correctly identified what I wanted to say. I mean, like, you know, like, it's unfair. I hate when I do that. Like, I'm looking for, like, trying to generate something, but I'm only looking for one answer. So people don't, like, what are you going to do? Right, but that's correct. It's unusual. Don't you think it's unusual? Like, the whole exclusion of Moshe seems very strange. Like, it's okay, maybe that's true, but why point out Veloya? It's like a whole pasuk, remember? Veloya chol Moshe lavo el omoei. And remember, we said that whole phrase repeats itself. The glory of God is in the Mishkan, and that phrase is there because it's about Moshe this time. So you almost have a whole pasuk that goes out of its way to say, you know how Hashem is back in the Machane and the Mishkan, but it's not Moshe. Why is the Torah specifically at the end, at the culmination, sort of at the ideal, emphasizing the fact that Moshe cannot enter into the Ohel Moed? Yes, Aviva.
Maybe this is not it, but, mm-hmm. But Moshe, of course, was not able to enter Eretz Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And this could have been a prefiguring of the fact that he was not going to enter Eretz Israel.
Ooh.
And here he was not able to enter Mishkan. So
that's heavy. I don't know if I would go that far. You could only say that if you think that Bnei Yisrael weren't going to enter Eretz Yisrael because of the Chet HaEgel. Which is hard to say, because it says, Salachti ki dvarecha. Meaning the simple understanding, the Pshat, is that only Chet of the Meraglim got them kicked out of Eretz Yisrael, not Chet HaEgel. And Hashem forgave them.
Yeah.
Right. So it's hard to say that it went so far as to exclude them, even exclude Moshe even from that early point. Interesting. Okay, so the Midrash has another problem. Let's look at Rashi for a second. V'lo yachol Moshe lavol ol moed. Moshe cannot enter ol moed. Says Rashi, is that true? V'katuv echad omer, ubebo Moshe el ol moed. If you look in Bamidbar, it says later on, Moshe could enter into ol moed. So why is the Torah saying that Moshe could not enter into the ol moed? Says Rashi, ba katuv hashlishi v'yachriya b'nehem. Are you familiar, by the way, with this terminology? Right? Ba katuv hashlishi v'yachriya b'nehem. At the end of Korbanot, and if, I don't know if you ever say the Korbanot, like the end of Korbanot, it says, Tein shnei ketuvim machichim zeh et zeh. Right? All men know this because it's the last thing that they say before they start Pesukei Dezimra and Shol in the morning. Mm-hmm. Right? So one of the things we say is the Yud Gimel, the 13 attributes of deriving the Torah. Mm-hmm. So the last one is, V'chein shnei ketuvim machichim. The reason we know this one by heart is because that's the one the Chazan says before, like they say Kaddish, and you never skip a Kaddish. V'chein shnei ketuvim machichim zeh et zeh. If you have two Pesukim that that contradict one another. You take the third pasuk, and it decides. So basically, two against one, we win. So Rashi is using that terminology. The third pasuk says, "Ki shachan alav he'anan." No, it's when the cloud dwelled. Emor me'ata, we'll say from here, from now. Kol zman shahaya alav he'anan lo haya yachol lavo. When the cloud was there, Moshe could not enter. Nistalek he'anan, when the cloud left, nichnas umedaber imo. So you have this really interesting, unusual situation in which, if Moshe wanted to talk to God, he could enter the Ol Moed.
To wipe the cloud.
The only when the cloud would, like, lifted. So Moshe could talk to God, but when?
When
Hashem wasn't there, in almost in a sense. Like, oh, when God is there, then Moshe can't go in. When God leaves, in a sense, then Moshe can go in and talk to God. It was like, then he picked up the phone. So isn't that strange? Yeah. Doesn't that strike you as unusual? Yeah. When you say that, Moshe? Why? What?
Sounds like it should be the opposite,
right? When the cloud is there.
You don't need Moshe when Hashem, when the Beis HaMikdash is here. When
you don't need Moshe?
He's the messenger. He brought Am Yisrael out of Egypt, and they needed him to talk directly to Hashem because they couldn't handle Hashem directly. But when Hashem comes directly, they don't need Moshe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's a little strong for me. I'm not so comfortable with saying that. Of course we need a Moshe. Moshe conveyed the Torah to the Jewish people. Correct? We always need not Moshe himself, but a Moshe. So what's the idea of the cloud? There's another midrash that you don't have. The Gemara says the following. There's another pasuk. It says, how could you say, "V'lo yachol Moshe lavo el ol mo'ed"? The pasuk says, in Shemot, Perek Kaf Dalid, "Vayavo Moshe b'toch he'anan." Moshe did enter into the cloud. What cloud was that?
That was the one on Sinai.
Very good. Cloud on Sinai.
But that different.
Okay. We should never forget, right, this idea of the cloud. Many, especially modern commentaries, talk about this idea, the imagery of the cloud entering into the Mishkan amongst the Jewish people is in and of itself a recreation of Ma'amad Har Sinai. Because remember, Moshe went up to the Har Sinai, the cloud and the fire, right? The cloud and the fire, etc., etc. And he received the Torah, and he dwelled with God. Right? And who was surrounding the mountain?
Am Yisrael
is all around the mountain. Now you take the same situation, you take the Ol Moed, you place it smack in the middle of the Jewish people, and now comes down the cloud of God, dwelling in the people, and we'll take that whole setup, and we'll move it with us as we enter into Eretz Yisrael. It's a very beautiful idea, very beautiful imagery, right? Exactly. So why can't Moshe go in? Why can't Moshe go in? What? I have an answer. I'm going to suggest an answer. And the answer lies in the fact, in trying to address the question we answered originally, which is, what's the difference between having God, having the Shekhinah, or not having the Shekhinah? What are we trying to recreate? What do we want? So in order to do that, to understand this, or to try to come to an understanding of this, this is all obviously very strongly connected to the Chet HaEgel. And all of this, you can't understand this without learning the Chet HaEgel. So if you will please, turn back to Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33. Chapter 33.
Of which
part? Kitisa. Perek Lamed Gimel.
Suk?
Aleph. Chapter 1. Amigimo Pasukale. Tammy, behind you, there's a small thing of tissues. Yeah. Right up there. Thank you. 33. This is after God has already forgiven the Jewish people. Right? Not forgiven them entirely. God said, Moshe is on Har Sinai. Moshe is on Har Sinai. Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and says, you got a problem.
Okay.
Your people have built this Egel, and I'm going to destroy them. I am so mad, I'm going to blow them up right now. I'll save you, make you into Bnei Israel. Moshe pleads to God, says the right words, and says, and Hashem says, Salachi kidvarecha. Okay. But what's the response? But I'm going to forgive you, but I'm not going to let you let them off the hook. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. Okay, Moshe goes down. Moshe gets off the mountain, breaks the luchot, destroys the luchot, punishes the Jewish people. The Levim kill thousands of Jews. Moshe says, you guys are terrible. I can't believe you did this. Now I got to go back to God. We got to work this out, etc., etc. Now we pick up the story. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe. Lech alei mizeh. Ata v'ha'am asher ha'aleita me'eretz Mitzrayim. This language is so sharp. Lech alei mizeh. Go up. Mizeh.
From this.
What's this? What?
The whole
Balagan,
the whole terrible thing that they
did. But they're in Har Sinai. Lech alei mizeh. How does that sound like?
Get out.
Can I just ask you a question? What happens in this parasha? The Chet
HaEgel? Yes. This is already after Chet HaEgel. Like, God is like, Lech alei mizeh, get out. Ata, v'ha'am asher ha'aleita me'eretz Mitzrayim. You and
this nation
that Hashem Asher
you took out of
the land of Egypt. El ha'aretz asher nishbati la'Avraham li'Yitzchak u'li'Yakov le'mor le'zar'acha et nena. Take them up to the land that I promised Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I'll give to their children. Meaning what?
Like nothing.
What?
Nothing.
No. What is God saying in a sense? God is saying, okay, I forgave you. You know what?
Get him out of here.
Get him out. Just go. Okay. You want the land. I promised them the land. Whatever. Is that what it sounds like? Like the language.
Say whatever.
What? I don't know if it says whatever. But in the language, it's like it's very strong. Like it's not like, Moshe, I've taken this. Like, you know, we know the language. We all know the language. I've taken this for the chosen people. They are my chosen people. My Am Hanivchar. Am Segula Mikol Ha'amim. And I will be with you. Go. Alei mizeh. You and the people that you brought out of Egypt go to the land that I promised Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to give to their children. It's almost like, you know, when you're so angry at your kids, you can't talk to them, you can't say, like, you know, hey, Frank, no. You know what I'm saying? Like, just get, go. I'm so angry. Shalachti lefanecha malach. I will send before you an angel. Megei rashti etakanani ha'emori ha'chiti ha'prizi ha'chivi va'yevusi. I will send you an angel who will drive out these seven nations, Pasuk Gimel, El Eretz Zabat Chalav U'Dvash, to land of milk and flowing with milk and honey, Ki Lo E'ele Bekir Becha. I will not go up in your midst, Ki Am Kshe Oref Ata, Pen Achel Cha Badarech. You are a stiff-necked nation, lest I destroy you on the way. Meaning what?
I get so mad at you that I would destroy you before you got to Eretz
Yisrael. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation. As your children get older, and you have for sure, where your child begins to argue with you. And the best piece of advice you could give your child is to say, you know, maybe we should remove ourselves from the situation before this gets out of control in a way that you're going to regret. Right, I have given such advice very recently. Okay, it depends on the child. You'll see. You'll look at me like, it never happened. What? You know what I'm saying? It's an older child thing, wouldn't you say? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. Young children, you can impose your will. Older children, they stop allowing you to impose their will, and they just give you, you know what I'm saying, give it back. So you say, you know what? I don't think that this situation is good. Right? It's a confrontational situation. Had this, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, okay. seems to be that knowing look, okay.
She's the angel.
Yeah, okay. And it's really good advice. It's often very good advice. You know what? We need to create a situation where there's not going to be a confrontation, okay? So God says, you know what? Instead of my removing you from the situation, I'll remove myself from the situation because if I'm in your midst and you get me mad, I will destroy you. So instead, yeah? What do you mean?
Yeah. It's just, I just feel like we're basically pulling God down to like our own ways of dealing with, you know, misbehaving children and anger. And I don't know.
Yeah,
no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we're attributing very human traits to God.
Let's look at Rashi.
That's all.
Okay. Kilo e'ele bekir b'cha. I will not go up in your midst. For this reason I say to you, I am standing before you an angel. Ki am kshe oref ata, you are a stiff-necked people.
What does a stiff-necked mean?
Stubborn. Stiff-necked means we're not flexible. Right? When I say it's got to be X, it's got to be X. Right? We don't bend to the will of God. We do what we want. Okay? Ukesh shchinati bekir bechem, when my shchina is in your midst, ve'atem mamrim bi, and you rebel against me, marbe ani aleichem zaam. Well, what do you mean? How do you understand it then? If you don't like it, then that's kind of what it says. How would you rather understand it?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
One could argue, you want to take the rational approach? I'll give you the rational approach. The rational approach is, even if God himself isn't directly in their midst, okay, when the explicit presence of God is in their midst, and yet they sin, right, that's what makes it worse. One of the things that was so bad about Har Sinai is they're at Har Sinai. They had just experienced God. And still they you know, it's one thing to say, okay, we need a God, and we slipped, and whatever. You're right there.
You could say, and not that I'm defending them, you could say that they had this moment when they were expecting Moshe to come back, mm-hmm. whether they said the calculations were off, whatever it was, mm-hmm. they had nothing. They had no Shechina, they had no Torah, they had no Moshe.
What are you talking about? They're at Har Sinai, the cloud is there. It's not that the cloud isn't there. Moshe's not there.
So maybe they're not as a complex enough nation to... They needed Moshe, they needed, I don't know, right? And I feel like what I'm struggling with is you're basically saying, a cooling off period.
No, it's not saying a cooling off period. It's not saying a cooling off period. It's not a permanent, it's not a period.
It's how it is.
That's gonna how it's gonna be. That's exactly right. Things have to change. This plan that I had, it's almost a sense, it's a sense of compassion on God's part. Because only God knows how close God came to actually destroying the Jewish people. I.e., and destroying the Jewish people, either recreating through Moshe Rabbeinu, or destroy the Jewish people, the way we understand it, what would that mean? Annihilating them and destroying the world. Correct, because that's the whole point. If our job is to bring God into the world, and we're not here, right? God didn't create the world, just stop for nothing, and you got to start again. Or not.
Traditionally, we have to feel sorry for, it's like, I heard it was like having an affair on your wedding night. The whole thing was like a chuppah.
Right.
So it's
absolutely correct.
That we like feel, we say, well, they didn't have Moshe, and it was hard for them, and they were in the dead. Like, we just say it was terrible. Didn't
correct. Don't you think so? Mm-hmm. No, you could come up with all the reasons in the world, but it's still terrible.
I'm not saying it wasn't terrible. I'm just saying...
So Hashem's reaction is one of, something has to change. I mean, if you, it's like we always say, if you do something once, and you slip up, that's one thing. But then to put yourself in the exact same situation and then expect nothing to be different, what's changed?
But again, it's like making it sound like Hashem had this plan, realized it didn't work, then he said, okay, let's try something else.
Why? Why was it? He had this plan, and why didn't it work? It wasn't because God was wrong. What didn't work about it?
We don't.
We weren't on the level to be able to sustain the level of spirituality that God demanded of us. So what God says is, you know what? Okay, what we're going to do is remove me from the situation so that because I understand who you are, I have to build in a buffer.
But how long do we need to be in timeout for?
Timeout.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, like today. You don't have that feeling that he's with us all the time. And are we in a buffer zone?
Yeah, we're in timeout.
How long has the timeout been for?
That's what I'm asking you.
What?
And how long is it going to perpetuate?
Ah, excellent question. Which is our question. Okay, so let's see what happened. Okay.
My children say another few hundred years.
After they say?
Yeah. Well, another couple of hundred years.
That's the longest it can go, according to all the sources.
Today.
6,000. Well, a second. You want to hope.
No, it's the principles of faith. Beviat
Hamashiach, ve'af apishim namiyah, achakelo b'chol yom. It's a faith that I will wait for him to come. It doesn't mean I expect him to come. Right? According to the sources, the world is 6,000 years long. Okay, so you got not 100 years. You got 100 and what are we? 57, 72. You're in 127 and a half years to go. Right? Do you think you could last that long? And that's the longest it'll go. But okay. What did the Jewish people do? Vaishma, I mean, it's a sense of compassion. It's a plan in order to make this thing work. You guys go. I want you to go. I'm not going to destroy the Jewish people. Figure out how to do it in a way that's less. In a way that's not overt. In a way that's not direct. Vaishma ha'am et ha'davar ha'ra hazeh vayit abalu. The people heard this terrible thing and they mourned. Velo shatu ish edyo alav. And did not place each one their edyo. It means their adornments, their what does it say? How does he translate it?
Not put on his crown.
His crowns, whatever that means. Somehow they had, they displayed some sense of mourning. It's either a physical, the Chazal talk about in sense of like a spiritual adornment. But they vayit abalu. The people heard this and they're like, what do you mean? What do you mean God's not going to be on him? This is terrible. This is impossible. We can't accept this.
Which were we?
Pasuk Dalet. Now we're in Hey. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. God says to Moshe, Emor el Bnei Yisrael. Say to the Jewish people, Atem am kshe orif. You are a stiff-necked people.
Again.
Again. Last time it was bad.
Yeah.
This time,
worse.
It's better. It's good.
Better.
Why? Rega achad ele bekir b'cha v'chiliticha. If I'm in your midst, one second I could enter into your midst and destroy you. V'ata horeid edicha me'elecha. But now take off your adornments. V'eda'a ma'e'eselach. And I don't know what I'm going to do with you guys, because on the one hand, when I'm in your midst, I destroy you. When I'm not in your midst, what do? You go into mourning, go crazy, and say, oh, we need God in our midst. Are you nuts? Because if you get what you ask for, you might get what you're asking for. So what's God to do?
It says, put off, therefore now, put off thy ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
So Hashem is saying that the mourning is okay.
God apparently is happy with their mourning.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Correct.
It's not the idea that they're going crazy. They're doing something appropriate.
They are doing something appropriate. Right. Meaning their desire to have God in their midst is good. Of course we want God in our midst. Don't we want God in our midst?
Yeah.
Do we want? Do you know what the price of God in your midst is?
More rockets?
Please God, we should
No.
Less rockets.
Well, if...
You behave.
Right. Do you really want God in your midst? It's like the Havdil, the anthropomorphism of the parenting.
No more Downton Abbey.
Right, do you... What?
No more
Downton Abbey. You're not kidding. Yeah, really, 100%.
No more what?
No.
Don't even
call. Don't ask me. I don't know, and I'm sure it's true. Okay. Yeah. No. Don't. Okay. Meaning, when you have God in your midst, there are expectations of a certain level of behavior and spirituality that you are expected to maintain, and a failure to maintain that level brings about swift, direct retribution. So Hashem said, they're not on this level. And they said, no, we can be on this level. We want to be on this level. And God said, I don't think so. Because with great power, you all know the rest of that phrase? No?
Great responsibility.
Comes to, very good. I'm very impressed. Do you know where that's from? With great power comes great responsibility. Oh, please, you don't know? Ask your kids. Okay. What? Spider-Man, come on, with great power comes great responsibility.
Very close, Shira. That's very close.
Okay. What? You knew? Okay.
I'm sure Obama took it into one of his.
Yeah, whatever.
Meaning,
the more I'm in your midst, the more. And that's why Hashem, you should know what Chazal say, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, that a God judges Tamidei Chachamim and Tzadikim kechut ha-se'ara. Because the closer you are to Hashem, the more the smaller mistakes you make are amplified. Because it means more. So you want to be close, Hashem says? You're not ready for that.
But it's also the benefits are huge. Something that happened this week. Friend of Daniel's was on Facebook. There's a single person in England having a nice time, like earning money. He was complaining about how much sleep they got, and he was like, "We don't get any sleep."
The
benefits long term are so much more worthwhile if you invest.
What are you referring to? Of not having the single life and
having just like finding the world and.
I understand what you're saying. 100%. Obviously, this is true. Obviously, ideally, the purpose is the point is to get to the place where we want God in our midst, and we're able to say, "I can live without Downton Abbey or whatever it's called, right? You know what I'm saying? I can live without these things. I don't want these things. They're not really important. The important things are what I want, and therefore I want God in my midst because I want to expect myself to be on that level. And that's what the Jewish people are saying. They removed these adornments, these crowns from Har Chorev. It's very vague, this language. So interesting. Right? These crowns imply the presence of Hashem, the joy that they have, the celebration, the happiness of having God in their midst.
They were innovative.
Pasuk Zayin. We don't read this part of Chida Egal enough. Moshe yikach et ha'ohel v'natalo michutz l'machane harchek min ha'machane. Moshe took the Ohel Moed, right? Before there was even a Mishkan. He took this tent, and what did he do with it? He took it out. V'kara lo Ohel Moed v'haya kol mevakesh Hashem yetzei el Ohel Moed asher michutz l'machane. Anyone who wanted to find God, you could find God, except you had to go to God. You had to go outside the camp to seek Moshe. Okay? V'haya, and it would be, Kitzed Moshe el ha'ohel, yakumu kol ha'ida, v'nitzu ish batachol. When Moshe would go to the ohel, to this tent, each person would stand at his doorway, v'hibitu acharei Moshe ad bo'ola. They would look at Moshe until he entered into this. They would watch him, like, leave the camp, in a sense. You can imagine, there's this sense of sadness and mourning because we used to have Moshe in our midst. And now when Moshe wants to go talk to God, he can't do it anymore. He has to leave. He has to leave the Yishuv. And everybody would like watch him walk down, you know what I'm saying, and go speak to God. And when Moshe would go into the tent, Yered Amud Ha'anan V'amad Petach Ha'ohel V'diber Im Moshe. Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you're seeing a certain parallel. Okay, when Moshe would enter the tent, then the cloud would descend and stand at the entrance of the tent and speak to Moshe. V'ra'a kol ha'am et amun ha'anan omed petach ha'ohel. The whole nation would see this pillar of cloud standing at the entrance to the tent. V'kam kol ha'am v'ishtachavu ish petach ha'ohel. And each person would bow down when they saw this cloud talking to God. V'diber Hashem el Moshe panim el panim kasher yidaber ish el reyehu. Moshe spoke to God face to face like a person would speak to his friend. Very, very powerful idea, this idea of panim el panim. So powerful, we have no idea what it means. And Moshe spoke to God face to face because
they're not equals.
What? And because God doesn't have a face. Okay, right. How do you speak to God face to face if God doesn't have a face? Okay? To mean?
He was very close to God.
Correct. As close as possible. Okay? Now let's translate the next phrase. I'm at the very end of Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vishav el Hamachane. How do you translate that? What does that mean? Vishav el Hamachane. I'm in Yud Aleph. Vishav el Hamachane. What's that?
Again? Anything like again?
Shoot. Vishav el Hamachane. Let's okay. What?
Past.
And how does he translate it?
Well, I'm. Struggling.
What's bothering you? Good for you. She's not even looking at the English. Terrific. What are you struggling with? This is great.
So shav almost sounds like the past of shuv.
Lashuv means to
return.
Okay.
And
well, how would you say? Again. How would you say in the past tense to return?
In the past what?
Vishav el machane. What is it? What, how would you say it? If you wanted to say
return.
What? Vishav el machane.
Yeah.
Okay. What does vishav mean? The word shav. What's something's bothering you? What does it mean? So it doesn't say what it sounds like. How do they translate it? Now you can look. How do they translate it in the?
He would return.
How would you say and he would return? V'yashav al hamachane. See, because it says v'diber Hashem Moshe panim panim. And he spoke. And then it should say v'yashav al hamachane. But it doesn't say that. It says v'yashav al hamachane. Then it says u'mesharto Yehoshua ben Nun nar lo yamish mitoch ha'ochel. And his servant is Yehoshua ben Nun, right? This youngin, this lad, who would not dwell from amongst the ohel. This pasuk is like, what in the heck is going on in this pasuk?
Maybe the Yud is Hashem's name, and you return to that Hashem.
It's a great shot. You'd have to write your parish on the Chumash. I'm not going that far. You have great ideas, but I mean, like, yeah.
I keep thinking of this circle because Yehoshua is the one who brings, one of the ones who brings back a different report from the spies.
Mm-hmm.
Who says, yes, we can. We can go into the land, and therefore he's allowed to go in. He leads the people.
Yehoshua. Are you still on this fact that Moshe couldn't get back?
Yeah. And I mean,
so you have to write that in your commentary on the Torah, because I'm not going there either. Let's look at Rashi. Okay, what does it mean v'shav l'machaneh? So the pshat is like they say, v'shav l'machaneh v'achar shenedaber imo hayashav Moshe l'machaneh. Hayashav. See what Rashi did? After Moshe spoke to God, hayashav.
He would
go back. What's the problem?
It doesn't say
hayashav. It says vishav. Hmm. Grammatically, it doesn't mean that. Okay, we always have this problem when we read psukim. We're going to skip a little bit, okay? Because he says there's a midrash. One second.
So what they're trying to say, that
it
refers to Hashem.
What's that?
What they're trying to say, that the
Shav
refers to
Hashem,
not to Moshe.
Okay. Umidrasho. There's a long Rashi. See the second Rashi on vishav al-machaneh? There's a second Rashi on Bishab al-Machaneh. See where it says, V'targumo. Targumo, you see that? You have to skip a bunch. It's a long Rashi on the whole chronology of what happened historically. Right. And the dates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bishab al-Machaneh, the second one. Okay, now skip down a couple lines, and it says, in there, Umidrasho. Go down. Here, Umidrasho, right here.
Okay. Right before you.
Last line.
Okay,
see your midrash show?
Yeah.
Now the midrash says, what does the midrash say?
Okay.
You see that?
Yeah.
Good. Midrash show. Now just stop for a second. Just hold your finger on the place. We have pshat. So we now know what it means in the pshat. The pshat means, and he would return. Moshe would go back into the tent when he's done talking to God. Midrash show. Udvar v'diber Hashem el Moshe. Moshe said to God, She yashuv el hamachaneh. God told Moshe, go back to the camp. Amar lo.
Shav, go.
Go back. Amar lo. Ani bekas. V'ata bekas. If I'm angry at them and you're angry at them, im kein, mi karvim. Who's going to bring them back to God? And so what does it mean? It's a beautiful idea. V'shav, let me just read the pasuk again. V'diber Hashem Moshe panim el panim kasher yidaber ish al reyehu. Moshe spoke to God face to face. Vishav el hamachanem. What did God say to Moshe?
Go back.
Go back to the camp. I understand why you pulled me out. I understand why I have to be out. But when I said I'm leaving, I didn't think that you were going to leave too. Because if I leave and you leave, then what do they have? Nothing.
You're saying it's Lashon Sivui.
Yes.
Not,
isn't it Lashon Sivui, Shav?
And not
past tense.
Yeah.
Look at Rashi. See the second Rashi. B'shav l'machaneh. Read for a second. Targumo. V'tav l'mashrita. Right. And return l'mashrita. Mashrita l'sharei to your service. L'fishu l'ashon hove. It's not past. It's present. Right. This the word itself is problematic. It's extremely problematic. It needs to be elucidated. Okay. So the Midrash comes and says, God says that this is also based. The Rashi is based on the Gemara at the very end of Brachot. I'll just read the language of the Gemara. What?
It's
Shav. 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 The Shav.
Shav.
Go back. Shav means to sit, I guess. Okay. Says the. One second. Chumash. Here we go. V'shav l'machaneh. Amar Rabbi Avahu. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. Said God to Moshe. Achshav yomru ha-yomru. They'll say, Harav bikas, if the master is angry, v'talmid bikas, and the student is angry, Yisrael matehe alehem. What's going to happen to the Jewish people? Everybody's just mad at them. Im ata machzir ha'ohel limkomo mutav. If you bring the ohel back to its place, mutav. Great. V'im lav, and if not, then we get to the end of the pasuk. Yehoshua ben Nun Talmidecha Misharei Tachtecha. And if you don't go back, your student Yehoshua, he'll take over for you. Right? And that's the end of the pasuk. V'shav el hamachaneh, mushartu Yehoshua ben Nun lo yamish mitoch ha'ohel. That's the relevance of Yehoshua ben Nun.
It is connected.
Of course it's connected. Of course it's connected. So Hashem said to Moshe, you got to take the ohel back. Because you ever wonder, like there's no record, we know we have a record here, that Moshe takes the ohel away and takes it out. When did he bring it back? When did it come back? Comes on the Midrash and says, Hashem says to Moshe, you got to bring the ohel back. Okay, because it can't be both you and me mad at them. It's got to be one or the other. Ubabo Moshe el ha'ohel, when Moshe came to the ohel, then the Anan would come down and God would talk to Moshe, the Anan, outside of the camp. If this in context, let's go back to the end of the Pekudei.
Like what you were doing with your parents. Like
I was just thinking, good comment.
In big trouble. Yeah, big trouble. And back to our analogy, okay? Now let's go back to our analogy. Let's go back. Now the Ohel Moed, they built the Mishkan, it's back in the middle of the camp. It's back in the middle of the camp. Okay?
Pekudei what?
The end. Mem lamed dalet. Back to our psukim, chapter 40, pasuk 34. Vayechas anan et ohel moed ukvod Hashem milat hamishkan. He's back in the camp, back in the middle of the camp, and the cloud of glory is back there. But this time, v'lo yachol Moshe l'ohel moed ki shachan anan alav he'anan ukvod Hashem milat hamishkan. This time, as opposed to when it was outside of the camp, when it was Moshe in the cloud, this time, when the cloud is in the tent, in the camp, then Moshe can't enter.
Oh,
Moshe is in a sense...
between.
Right, kept out in a sense. Right. I get a sense that the Jewish people came to equate Moshe so closely with God that when Moshe had left, when Moshe was gone, they felt that God wasn't in their midst as well. Because remember we said, how is it that God was going to solve the problem? Meaning, okay, they said, no, we want God in our midst. And God says, but I'm going to destroy you if you mess up again. So what changed? And the answer that changed is, yes, God is in their midst. But this time, Moshe is not in the cloud. He's not on the mountain. He's not the same. He's not on the high level. He's not face to face. He's excluded. And when God, when does Moshe talk to God? Only when the cloud lifts. When the cloud is not there.
But it's also not panim
upanim. Not panim upanim. Not the same way. We don't know what way it was. We don't really understand if that ever changed. That was only then. That's only when the cloud is there. But there's this clear separation. There's this clear distinction. Because something had to be changed. Something had to be different.
But
why? But the sense. Well, let me just finish the thought, and I'll get to your question. The sense that we get from this is that the Jewish people intuitively sensed that if Hashem wasn't literally in their midst, that if they didn't have the sense of the presence of the Shekhinah, right, their joy, their edyam, their sense of connection to Hashem would be so lacking that almost that they went into mourning. And that their entire desire was to bring God to the situation where they had the Ohel Moed back within them. You know, when we ask that question, like, you know, do we really want God in our midst? We're almost afraid to answer the question. You know, the thing that we want the most, the return of the Beit HaMikdash, we're afraid to answer the question. Because what would it demand of us? What would it require of us? That's really what the Parsha really asks of us. They wanted Hashem, they wanted the glory of Hashem, but they understood the responsibility that that entailed. You know, and instead, what we have today is what they once were threatened with. Oh, I'll send an angel, right? Hinei anashi yisal shaleach malach. It almost like, I feel like it describes, okay, right? And he'll like drive out all these nations, you know? So we have them, we have that angel today. What do we call it? Kipata, whatever. We call it Kipata Barzel. You know what I'm saying? We call it the Iron Dome. We have, like, that's the angel of Hashem. And we see it and we feel it, but we don't even know. It's okay. It's, you know, okay. You know what I'm saying? And the Jewish people intuitively understood that that's not what we're all about. It's not what we're supposed to be all about. We're supposed to see the presence of God. We're supposed to bring God into our midst in such a way where the world will look upon us and see us as an ideal, a spiritual ideal to yearn for and to emulate. And meanwhile,
we're at a lower level.
Of course, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And meanwhile, instead, we struggle. We struggle. We have that angel and we don't even see it. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, but on the other hand, are we ready for the responsibility that that great power would bring about? And I think the answer is we're supposed to want it every day, right? But when is it going to come? It's going to come either when we're so unready as God has no choice but to redeem us, or when we are ready, like the Jewish people, to take that responsibility upon ourselves to both want the presence of God, but to be ready to accept the responsibility that that entails. Are we there yet?
No.
Right. No, we're not there yet. Not even close. I don't know. Our job is to get as close as we can get. To say, yes, I want that Shekhinah. I want it in my midst. But I'm ready for that responsibility.
Don't even know anything anymore about their religion or...
Yeah, we say that. Do you think more don't know than 10 years ago or more know than 10 years ago? Look in terms of...
I
was listening to this program. I was listening to this podcast. I think it's better, for sure. I was listening to this program, this podcast, on my way home. There's this guy named Grover Norquist. Anybody know who Grover Norquist is? You don't follow American politics.
Yeah.
He made every American politician, every Republican, sign a pledge that he would not raise taxes.
Yeah.
He's doing this for 25 years, and he said something. He said, over a period of a generation, you can accomplish anything. If you have a single mindedness to achieve a goal, and you work at it steadfastly, without fail, and you work on that goal, he says you can achieve anything. And what's frightening is, if you go on Wikipedia, Grover Norquist, mm-hmm. He has changed, this guy, some guy you never heard of, has literally changed the face of American politics. And because of that, many, many things in the world. Because he believed in this idea. And I thought to myself, just thinking about that, imagine if we picked something and we said, this is my goal for the next 25 years, and I'm going to work on it and not give up on it for 25 years. How much change could we affect? Hard to say.
You said he made them sign
a pledge. Yes. He made them sign a pledge. The main thing he does, they sign a no-tax pledge. I promise, before I even run for anything, I will never vote to raise taxes in any way. And it's changed the face of, how much, what could we do if we had that same indication? We'll stop here.